It's the big one. It's the big daddy today.
We only fucked up twice. It's pretty remarkable.
Wait, what do you mean we fucked up? Hello, welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's the podcast about the history and culture of death and tea. Death and tea. And decomposition. My name is Dorian. I'm recovering from illness and saying total nonsense. With me, as always, is Max. How are you?
I'm not sick. I'm feeling pretty good. Feel alive.
Yeah.
Been doing this for a whole year, so I feel older than when we first started.
It's been one entire year since we've done this podcast. If you're listening, thank you so much for supporting us over a year. We're a full-grown baby.
We can drive. Yeah, like, before we start all the dumb jokes and shit like that, it is really cool to think that for a whole year, people have been being like, oh, this is worth listening to, and telling other people to do it. Yeah. I like that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's awesome. Keep that up. Keep telling people. We appreciate it. We love hearing from you guys, too. Did you have any, like, banter? I'm ready to get right into it.
I had a dumb joke, if you want to get into the dumb jokes now.
Yeah, yeah. What's your dumb joke?
Here's a topical one that might give away the night we're recording this. Hey, what's Mario and Luigi's favorite day?
Super Bowl.
Game day!
That's it? That's the joke?
Kid at work told me that.
Oh, because you're not allowed to say Super Bowl?
No, just game day.
just game day. That
it's not, yeah. Not Super Bowl related, just game day. They live in a game.
Wow. I thought entirely too far into it.
Yeah.
See, do that. I'm just like, that joke is too pure for me. I just overthink it and ruin it.
It's really good.
Bad.
So speaking of things that are not pure and are dark and scary...
Are we talking about Tom Brady?
Tom Brady's diet. I've been saving a real banger for our birthday episode.
Oh, boy.
Dorian, today, we got cannibalism on the menu.
Delicious.
So in honor of our birthdays, I don't know if this is going to be a good idea or not, but I thought it might be kind of fun to, in addition to the branded LaCroix, if we shotgun a LaCroix as well.
Oh, no.
Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Sick.
I'm scared.
I like the idea of doing this live on air to get over your fear.
We're going to make a mess, I think.
No. Do you know how to shotgun good?
I'm not the best shotgunner, bud.
Here we go. You can't edit any of this out.
Wait. Should I? I feel like this is going to fucking spray all over the laptops and mic. Am I paranoid?
No, not at all. Just so you hold it like this.
Yeah.
So there's an air pocket here in the carbonation. If you're under the age of 21, turn this podcast off right now. And then you kind of poke where the thing is.
Sure. Okay, so you're definitely holding it so you're not, like, puncturing a part.
Yeah, it's just the air thing. Oh, hold it more vertical. Yeah, like you want it at this angle. Kind of amazed that you've never done this before.
I've done it with alcohol and no fear or just not acknowledging any of the consequences.
There you go.
I've never done this delicately in a recording situation with expensive stuff around me.
All right, let go. Look at that. No spill. So this is not... We are going to open real ones later. But for right now, let's do the pre-Dead Boys shotgun into the moment.
Wait, I did a dumb thing.
Brought to you by LaCroix. We're going to shotgun these bad boys right now.
Oh my god. Oh. Oh god. Oh my god.
This may have been a bad idea.
Max, I can't stop. I'm scared.
I don't feel good anymore. I thought this would be fun. I feel bad. Oh, my guts hurt. Maybe we can cut this next bit out.
Nope.
Holy shit.
You gotta just have 7 burps in a row to get it out of your system. Oh, you didn't finish yours? Yes. Don't you feel better?
Oh, Christ. Wow, I'm sweaty all of a sudden.
Yeah, that was intense. I've
been out of college for too long. I'm sweaty after shotgunning 1 non-alcoholic can.
Late 20s are weird.
Wow. Anyway, thank you for bearing in with us while we shotgunned. Happy birthday to us.
I hope that you, the listener, also shotgunned a beverage of your choice.
Oh, we should have said that before. We should have had, like, a communal shotgun. Okay, if you're under the age of 21, welcome back. Thank you for bearing with us through that. Your reward is that we do get to go into one of our very requested article topics, or episode topics tonight.
Yes.
Cannibalism.
We give the people what they want.
So let's have the more traditional pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment. Again, taking it back to the beginning, brought to you by LaCroix. Tastes better when you don't have to drink it real quick.
It was rocketing down my throat.
And look, no spill. You're going to be able to do that, no fear. You're just going to be like shucking a beer in bed now. Like climbing a beer, shucking a... Was there alcohol in this? What's wrong?
Climbing a beer and shucking a bed.
Oh, this is like... This is actually a high gravity LaCroix, that's why.
Oh.
Oops.
Limited batch.
Oopsie doopsie. So Dorian, what is cannibalism? Let's begin by defining our terms.
Cannibalism is the act of one individual of a species consuming all or part of another individual of the same species as food. To consume the same species or show cannibalistic behavior is a common ecological interaction in the animal kingdom, and has been recorded for more than 1,500 species. In humans, cannibalism is the act or practice of humans eating the flesh or internal organs of other human beings, typically done ritualistically or in moments of extreme duress.
So cannibalism is one of those terms where I think everyone knows what it means, but it's so good to hear on the air. If, like, I would have asked you what cannibalism was, and you wouldn't have known, maybe it would have been time to, like, you know, rethink the concept of this podcast. Like, really go back to the drawing board and
Max,
sort that out.
What's cannibalism? Max, what's death? What is life? Tell me! I'm a baby.
Like a blank slate. But because we're going to start at a really macro level and work our way in...
Like working our way into a... fucking cadaver eating the
with
guts.
A big turkey knife.
Ooh, and a spoon.
So I gotta give a shout out here to listener Dan S. from the Facebook group, who posted a link to a book titled Cannibalism, A Perfectly Natural History by Bill Shutt. So in this book, Shutt highlights how prevalent cannibalism is among, as we mentioned, a lot of animal species, over 1,500. So, if you don't like talking about cannibalism in people or knowing that it exists, you definitely wouldn't want to be like most animals.
Cannibalism seems to be especially prevalent in aquatic ecosystems, in which up to approximately 90% of the organisms engage in cannibalistic activity at some point in their life cycle. Cannibalism is also not restricted to carnivorous species, as it can be found in herbivores and decomposers.
Can you imagine how wild it would be if like 90% of people had eaten other people at some point?
I feel like we'd be living in fear of each other. I feel like I'd be going to the grocery store or library and just kind of have, you know, one eye over my shoulder.
If someone's just jumping on you. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, the ocean's wild, man. So... You might be especially confused at the herbivores part of that thing we just read. That doesn't really seem to jive with what, you know, a lot of people learned what an herbivore is in, like, fourth grade or whatever. Because an herbivore is, you know, something that eats plants. Well, I found a paper titled Cannibalism in Natural Populations by Laurel R. Fox that was published in a 1975 edition of the Annual Review of Ecology and Systematics. Fox found the following.
Perhaps surprisingly, a large proportion of observations of cannibalism among terrestrial animals is for species that are usually... Do you say the H?
Herbivores.
Okay.
Herbivore.
Whoops.
Herbivore. Herbivore.
Oh, Jesus. We gotta re-record the entire episode.
Did you say herbivore?
No, I said herbivore with a silent H that's not real. Well, we gotta start from scratch. You got two more LaCroix that we can shotgun? Hey, it's Dorian here. About halfway through recording, we realized that herbivore does not have a silent H. So we'll fix that right now. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Bye. Perhaps surprisingly, a large proportion of observations of cannibalism among terrestrial animals is for species that are usually herbivores, including butterfly larvae, leaf-eating beetles, and bark beetles. Several authors have noted that cannibalism may be widespread among herbivorous insects. In terrestrial habitats, an equal number of herbivores and predators were identified as practicing cannibalism.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking you don't listen to this podcast to hear about bugs eating other bugs. That's a pretty cool thing, and I would watch that.
Sure.
But that's not why you listen to this podcast.
No, sir.
If you wanted to hear that, you'd listen to Pre-Bug Boys.
That's right.
Which comes out on Fridays. And we do that, so just be sure to check that out as well. That podcast is not doing as well. So let's get to the good, good human stuff. And head all the way back to 12,000 BC in Somerset, England. Here, some pretty freaky stuff has been discovered in mass prehistoric graves that demonstrates that the practice of cannibalism goes way, way back.
Prehistoric human remains belonging to several Cro-Magnon individuals, including a teenager and a child around 3 years old, have been found in the cave and show clear evidence of cannibalism. Many of the bones were chewed by humans. Long bones and ribs had been cracked open and gnawed to extract marrow and grease. By studying the bones, scientists were able to decode the process of prehistoric cannibalization. Using 3D microscopic analysis of the various modifications, British Natural History Museum researchers were able to determine that body parts, such as the forearm, were first filleted and chewed. Then the bone was weakened with a zigzag pattern using the same stone tool before being broken to extract the marrow. Other bones showed cut marks where soft tissue had been meticulously removed. Three skulls were carefully shaped to create cups or bowls. This is metal as fuck, dude.
It's pretty metal, but can you imagine living so far back that people were so stupid they hadn't invented cups yet, and they had to drink out of skulls?
Is it that they couldn't, or that they didn't want to, because they wanted the best, coolest, like most coolest metal skull bowls? Thing.
It's like, oh, I can't find my Nalgene everywhere because I haven't invented it yet. I better just kill my neighbor and drink out of their skull. Like, what do you put your stickers on, man?
You put them on the skull. Then it's so cool.
You slap your...
You drink out of a skull with, like... I don't know, you probably got a Mountain Goat sticker that you're itching to put on something. You put that on the skull that you drink out of.
Slap it on there.
Yeah, man. It'd be awesome.
I feel like there's also like a Cro-Mags joke for all the Thrash kids.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. In there
sure.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
But I can't find it right now.
A Cro-Mags fan would totally do that.
Just drink out of a skull.
Yeah, if that hasn't happened already, it's bound to.
So, you know, as you can see, cannibalism has been around for a long time. Partly because there didn't used to be a lot of food cultivation, and we were forced to, you know, eat whatever food was available. But also, cannibalism existed for ritualistic reasons. Cannibalism for religious or funerary purposes is known as endocannibalism, and presents a whole new thing for us to unpack. So with endocannibalism, You remember how in Sky Burials, the people who practice it believe that your remains are re-entering into the life cycle?
Right.
It's that same philosophy.
Okay.
So that's why endocannibalism is sometimes referred to as learned cannibalism, because it's not driven by a need for food. It's not an instinctual need to eat the flesh of another human, like in a survival situation. It's heavily tied to cultural and religious rituals of a people group. One of the most well-known cultural examples of endocannibalism occurred among the Wari people of the Amazon.
The Wari tribe practiced endocannibalism as a way to transform their ancestors' bodies into spirits. The soul needs to be protected after death because the soul could enter another life form. Because of this, they do not hunt special kinds of birds, which are seen as a possible container for the souls of dead tribe members. The soul is only able to achieve a full salvation if the dead body is burnt after death, and if the ash is eaten by the family and the relatives of the dead person. From there, the spirit could become an animal that would provide food for generations to come.
So very similar to Towers of Silence or Sky Burial, these groups practice cannibalism as a way to help the soul progress. Basically, if there's no physical remnant of the body left in the world, the soul has no attachment to the world any longer, and the soul is able to completely move on past the human life cycle. Some other groups have, you know, definitely not practiced cannibalism as a way to help the soul progress, though. We've talked a bit about learned cannibalism earlier, but now we have to dip into crisis and survival cannibalism. So there's always been points when people have to resort to survival cannibalism, but possibly the most brutal instances can be found during siege warfare. You know, like big old medieval stuff.
That's a good summary of it.
Siege warfare was a form of attrition warfare, where the opposing army would back a population into a walled city or castle, and then just keep them there for months, possibly for years. This means that unless you live in a castle that you can grow food in, food's probably going to run out.
Right.
And if you're in a situation where you're going to be killed if you venture outside the city gates, you're probably going to resort to some extreme measures to survive. Unfortunately, one of the most extreme examples of siege cannibalism occurred in the year 757 during the Battle of Suyang during a rebellion in China. And this is just a warning. If we've ever had to install like a content warning in this podcast, this is one of the darkest things we've talked about. So if you're squeamish, maybe skip ahead a few minutes.
Yeah.
Because this is going to get pretty rough. But this was the perfect storm of cannibalistic conditions. Like, this was wild. At the time, the Yan army was opposing the rebellious army at Suyang. The commander of the Yan army noticed that the Suyang was already beginning to enter famine conditions due to their food supply lines being cut off. So basically, this army is already getting close to famine conditions in like a good point. But because of that, the Yan army moved into siege formation, backed the Suyang into one of their cities, and began one of the most brutal sieges of all time. So the passage you're about to read, Dorian, is from the Book of Tang, which is a history of the Tang Dynasty, written in the year 941.
Yin Zichi had besieged the city for a long time. The food in the city had run out. The dwellers traded their children to eat and cooked bodies of the dead. Fears were spread, and worse situations were expected. After the city was besieged for a long time at the beginning, the horses were eaten. After horses ran out, they turned to the women, the old, and the young. At this time, Zhang Shun took his concubine out and killed her in front of his soldiers in order to feed them. He said, "You have been working hard at protecting this city for the country wholeheartedly. Your loyalty is uncompromised despite the long-lasting hunger. Since I can't cut out my own flesh to feed you, how can I keep this woman and just ignore the dangerous situation?" All the soldiers cried and they did not want to eat. Zhang Shun ordered them to eat the flesh. 30,000 people in total were eaten. People knew their death was close and nobody rebelled. When the city fell, only 400 people were left.
Yeah, that's legitimately one of the most distressing and craziest things we've ever put on this podcast.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's so many people.
Yeah, and this siege went on for years, for lack of a better term, because of the food supply that came to the city through cannibalism. They were able to hold out for a really long time. And I think it's necessary to talk about that to highlight the distances that people will go when faced with horrible situations like this. It's interesting to highlight the distinction between the human body being sacred and set apart, and the belief that, you know, in the end, our bodies are just meat.
Right. This is a really interesting account for me because I'm someone with very morbid interests and I enjoy a lot of horror and stories about cannibalism. It gets easy to have a little bit of a disconnect as far as like what would happen to a community of people when they have to resort to cannibalism.
Yeah.
It's pretty alarming to just think about, well, they have to start with the women, the old, and the young, and just think about like 30,000 people being removed from a community, not just killed, but killed strategically by a group of people in distress.
Yeah.
I can't even begin to imagine what that would do.
And it sounds like one of those things too, where this may be like legendary or apocryphal, but it's all dated back to sources and there's evidence of this happening, which is intense.
Yeah, seriously. It's tough.
But let's move on from big old warning light territory here and resume making fun of some dumb old-timey people.
Yeah.
Back to the fun stuff.
It's a pre-Dead Boys specialty.
Yeah. Let's move into medical cannibalism. So you remember how in our mummies episode, we talked about unwrapping parties?
Yeah.
You know, if you were rich and you were a European at the time, you would send someone to Africa or Egypt to buy a mummy. Then you would have that mummy shipped back and you would just get blitzed.
For sure.
Just like blackout drunk. And you would hang out with a bunch of friends in your parlor and just unwrap this mummy. After unwrapping some of these mummy bodies, just, you know, kind of have some more fun with it, they would grind up parts of the mummies for medicine. So this is an account from the book Mummies, Cannibals, and Vampires, The History of Corpse Medicine from the Renaissance to the Victorians by Richard Sugg.
The question was not, should you eat human flesh, but what sort of flesh should you eat? The answer at first was Egyptian mummy, which was crumbled into tinctures to stanch internal bleeding. Mummy skin, often sold as mummia, was applied to the skin or powdered and mixed into drinks as a treatment for bruising and other ailments. Other parts of the body soon followed. Skull was one common ingredient, taken in powdered form to cure head ailments. It stands to reason.
Yeah.
Thomas Willis, a 17th century pioneer of brain science, brewed a drink for apoplexy, or bleeding, that mingled powdered human skull and chocolate. And King Charles II of England sipped the King's Drops, his personal tincture, containing human skull in alcohol. Even the toupee of moss that grew over a buried skull, called usnea, became a prized additive. Its powder believed to cure nosebleeds and possibly epilepsy. Human fat was used to treat the outside of the body. German doctors, for instance, prescribed bandages soaked in it for wounds, and rubbing fat into the skin was considered a remedy for gout.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, if you squint, you can kind of see like, oh, yeah, I guess you would want, like, if it feels like you got a headache, maybe you just get some more good head stuff in there and you grind up some skull. It's goofy.
Yeah.
But it also points out one of those weird double standards that's present through history. For Europeans in the 17th century, if you ate a recently deceased person, you were a savage and a cannibal. You were a bad person.
Bad. Boo. Ew. Gross.
However, if the people had been dead for a long time, then it was just medicine.
Yeah.
Whatever. And, you know, maybe this is kind of like a, maybe this kind of points out how we consume meat now. You know, like, I'll go to the store and I'll buy chicken and, like, cook it at my house, but I'm not going to go out and, like, find a chicken and kill it and drain the blood and then prepare it myself.
Why not, you coward?
Coward. You know, maybe I'd feel better about eating meat if I did that, but also I probably just wouldn't eat meat because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
It's a lot of work.
And it's gross. So maybe you can see how Europeans at the time would have similarly distinguished between the two. But let's not excuse them too much. Survival cannibalism was present even among Europeans at the time. They have simply no way of denying it.
In 2012, portions of the butchered skull and shin bone of a 14-year-old girl from England, dubbed Jane by researchers, were unearthed by archaeologists in Jamestown, Virginia. They found the remains about 2.5 feet down in a 17th century trash deposit in the cellar of a building inside the James Fort site. Doug Owsley, head of physical anthropology at the Smithsonian Museum, described multiple chop and cut marks on the girl's skull that were made by one or more assailants after she died. Owsley said, quote, "The cutting was not done by an experienced butcher, except possibly the chops to the shin bone. There is a hesitancy, trial, and tentativeness in the marks that is not seen in animal butchery. The desperation and overwhelming circumstances faced by the James Fort colonists during the winter of 1609 to 1610 are reflected in the post-mortem treatment of this girl's body."
Yeah, so this is where the record scratch plays.
Is that a record?
It's a record scratch. I don't know. I don't have records anymore. Who knows? You might be saying, wait, white people were cannibals too? White colonists in America? I thought only people who weren't white were cannibals.
Like those savages.
To that, I think we can safely say, sit down, you jerk. You dummy.
Listen up. Pre-dead boy's about to school you.
We're equal opportunity
cannibalists.
Cannibalists, yeah. So cannibalism has a long history of being weaponized by white Europeans to other groups of people who didn't look like them. It was a way to remove the humanness of people they found while colonizing or just generally taking over areas. By applying the cannibal label to people they encountered, specifically while colonizing Africa and the Americas, they completely eradicated any culture these people had. So imagine you're a big, fancy European king in the 1600s. You're like King Dorian of Spain.
I like the sound of this.
An explorer comes to you, and he's asking you for money for an expedition. You might say, well, I don't know, that land belongs to other people. It doesn't belong to me. I don't know how great I feel about taking their land. You know, because you're cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then the explorer says, oh, my dude, don't worry. The people that live there, they are animals. They even eat other people.
Ew.
Yeah, you would finance that exploration in a heartbeat.
Kill them.
And then you would, like, immediately go home and eat a weird paste made of mummy skin to fix your nosebleeds or something like that.
Kill those savages while I'm just, like, smothering human fat onto my skin.
And unwrapping a bunch of mummies and stuff like that. So the cannibal label immediately othered different cultures and made them worse than your own culture. In fact, the word cannibal is itself a pejorative label.
Cannibal, noun, human that eats human flesh, 1550s, from Spanish, canibal, from caniba, Christopher Columbus's rendition of the Caribs' name for themselves. The natives were believed by the Europeans to be anthropophagites. Columbus, seeking evidence that he was in Asia, thought the name meant the natives were subjects of the Great Khan. The form was reinforced by later writers who connected it to Latin canis, dog.
Yep. So the word cannibal is derived from a racist term for Caribbean natives because Christopher Columbus was dumb and thought he landed in Asia and he wanted to be racist to Asians.
Great.
So he was like, well, I'm going to compare them to dogs. So we've got him to thank for this word.
Listen, Columbus, Ohio is great, and I will defend this city with every bit of my being. But man,
great city.
It's a fantastic city. Really wish like there was any way around the name, because Christopher Columbus is like the biggest piece of trash in human history.
Yeah, this dude rolled up and then was like, oh, these are Asians, so they must all be related to Genghis Khan or something like that. So I'm just going to call them cannibals.
Great.
It's wild. Prior to this, cannibalism was known as selfeta, or literally self-eating.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So there's a long history of cannibal being a pretty exploitative term. If you'll permit me for a second, this was even touched on by the king of exploitation writing himself, William Seabrook. You may remember William Seabrook as being the person who coined the term zombie in the United States. So Seabrook is a super interesting dude, and if you want to read about him, I strongly recommend the book The Abominable Mr. Seabrook. It's a graphic novel by Joe Ullman, and it really dives into this dude's deep psyche. He was a profoundly like repressed and insecure person, and he dealt with a lot of his own issues by putting other cultures on blast. He was really into like bondage at a time when it was not cool to be into anything like that. And he kind of dealt with that anxiety by just putting other cultures on blast to make himself feel better.
Great dude.
Yeah.
A lot of great dudes you're giving me in this podcast so far, Max.
I'm really broadcasting some shitty people throughout history here. So in Seabrook's book, Jungle Ways, he writes about his travels in West Africa, as well as his own personal experience with cannibalism. He describes the taste of human flesh like this.
It was like good, fully developed veal. Not young, but not yet beef. It was very definitely like that, and it was not like any other meat I had ever tasted. It was so nearly like good, fully developed veal that I think no person with a palate of ordinary, normal sensitiveness could distinguish it from veal. The roast, from which I cut and ate a central slice, was tender, and in color, texture, smell, as well as taste, strengthened my certainty that of all the meats we habitually know, veal is the one meat to which this meat is accurately comparable. It's a little redundant.
He's really into the veal angle. So Seabrook was exploitative.
And of course his fucking favorite meat would be like baby animals that are just like stuck and not allowed to move so that they're nice and soft when he cooks them. What a fucker.
Big jerk. But, you know, it turns out when he wrote this, he didn't actually eat with West African cannibals. Because he attended a very culturally important ritualistic cannibal ceremony as an outsider, they didn't give him sacred human meat. They gave him gorilla meat instead. But here's the twist. Once Seabrook found this out, like his translator was like, hey, you know, that's not actually human meat. It's gorilla meat you ate back there.
What?
Once he found this out, he made an extremely questionable deal with a friend who worked at a hospital in Paris. This friend gave him a piece of flesh from a recently deceased person, and Seabrook had a bunch of people over and made them watch as he cooked it and ate it himself at his home. He did end up standing by his original description, too. He was like, yeah, I was like veal.
What a maniac.
Yeah, he's wild.
It's like, what, you think I won't eat human? I'll fucking eat human.
No one's gonna call me a coward.
His friends are like, why are we here? Why are we watching this?
Like, man, I really want to leave. The door's locked from the inside.
You don't have to do this. Jeez, Willie.
So others liken the taste of human flesh to being more like pork. And there's an old term for meat eaten by cannibals you may have heard before. Long pig. That's because, when cut, human meat simply looks like a big, long cut of pork. you know, we're bigger than a lot of pigs.
We are long pigs.
Yeah. No, human. It's the other white meat.
That's right.
The other. Now, we talked about crisis cannibalism earlier. And what podcast on cannibalism would be complete without giving a little nod to the Donner Party?
Woo!
So the Donner Party, and we may do a full episode on these folks at this point because it's such an interesting story.
Yes.
I won't go super far into it now, but it's like so interesting. They were a group of pioneers who traveled west to California in 1846. And as a result of sheer stupidity and hubris, they got stuck in the Sierra Nevada mountain range in the winter and were forced to turn to cannibalism. Like, it's the goofiest thing. They ran into Native Americans on their way over, and the Native Americans were like, "Hey, you guys look like you're really hungry and you don't have food. Do you want some food?" And they were like, "We don't need any help from savages." And they just turned the food down and kept going.
Great.
It's really stupid.
Just add them to the collection of real upstanding, smart people that we're talking about today.
So the Donner Party left with 87 members, but only 48 made it to their ultimate destination in California. Many of the survivors denied eating human flesh, probably because it's really tough to, like, get a job if everyone knows you're a cannibal.
Right.
It's really tough to reintegrate into society if you just move somewhere and they're like, "Oh, how was your move over to California?" And you're like, "Well, I, you know, snowed.
Yeah.
Ate some people."
What? Can you go back to that item?
No, it was a rough trip. It was a long one. But, you know.
Here's a pro tip for those of you looking for jobs. Don't put that on your LinkedIn or on your resume. You don't have to lie. Just don't say that you ate human flesh.
Omit.
Yeah.
What we have here, though, is a diary entry from one of the Donner Party members, Patrick Breen. This is an entry from his journal that details the incident and conclusively proves that, no, these folks did eat human flesh.
Thursday, 25th. Froze hard last night, fine and sunshiny today. Wind west. Mrs. Murphy says the wolves are about to dig up the dead bodies at her shanty. The nights are too cold to watch them. We hear them howl. Friday, 26th. Froze hard last night. Today, clear and warm. Wind southeast, blowing briskly. Martha's jaw swelled with the toothache. Hungry times in camp. Plenty hides, but the folks will not eat them. We eat them with a tolerable good appetite. Thanks be to Almighty God. Amen. Mrs. Murphy said here yesterday that she thought she would commence on Milt and eat him. I don't think that she has done so yet. It is distressing. The Donners, 4 days ago, told the California folks that they would commence to eat the dead people if they did not succeed, that day or next, in finding their cattle, which were then under 10 or 12 feet of snow, and the Donners did not know the spot or near it. I suppose they have done so ere this time.
Yeah, they did it, man.
For sure.
They leaned into it.
That's an admission right there.
I was talking to a guy recently who I ran into at Cornerstone, and he was like, he was talking about how he was moving out to California, and I was like, hey, good luck on your drive. Don't end up like the Donner Party, because I'm like a weirdo and just talk about that in normal conversation. And his eyes like lit up. He was like, "Oh no, I've actually driven out that way before, and I camped at the rest area at Donner Pass."
Wow, and you can do that?
Yeah, I guess the area where it all went down is just like a rest area now.
Yeah, just totally easy to travel through.
Yeah. And that's like where the Donner Party stayed.
Wow.
It's really goofy.
Road trip.
So, you know, Alec, if you're listening, I hope you made it out there all right and didn't have to eat anybody.
Yeah, let us know. Can you just let us know when you made it? And if you had to eat anybody?
And thanks for giving us this little podcast field trip we're going to have to take at some point.
Yes.
So, unless you're a Donner Party member, you're probably not going to end up cannibalizing anyone anytime soon. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
However, if you really want to eat somebody, you can. There is nothing illegal in the United States about the act of cannibalism itself.
Really?
Nothing on the laws about it. Granted, there's really no way to legally obtain human flesh. But if you do, you can eat it. I think from what I can tell, and I don't know anything about the law, so if you are like a smart person who does, and is also a freak, please let us know. But I think if I talk to you in life and establish that, like, when I die, I want to be eaten by you, and then, like, write
that's
that
legally
in my
binding,
will,
just recording that just on a right podcast there, yeah, and publishing that. Is that a done deal?
Satire, no, undo.
Oh,
undo.
Fuck. Damn it. He invoked satire.
If I write that up in a will as well, and you consent to it, I think you can eat me.
Give it some time. Think about it.
I'll think about it. I'll sleep on that.
But I'm down if you are.
It's kind of wild that that's not illegal through the proper channels, I guess. But I think the reason it's not illegal is because they don't want to have to, like, prosecute people for resorting to cannibalism if it's a survival situation.
Yeah, that would be shitty.
Yeah, it sucks to, like, survive a winter stuck out in the wild, and then the park rangers rescue you, and you're just immediately arrested and put on trial.
Never again, fucko. You're locked up for life.
We sent out all these search parties, and now we're going to put you to death, you freak. Even though it's not illegal, there are a few reasons you might not want to eat human flesh. Besides, like, you know, it's kind of nasty.
I'm not convinced I want to eat human flesh.
Well, you might not want to, because eating it can make you very, very sick. Have you ever heard of prions?
Prions?
Prions.
No, I have not.
So prions are diseases. It's weird. They're not viruses. They're not bacteria. It's kind of like a genetic misfire in a protein. Similar to how, like, cancer is just uncontrolled cell growth, a prion is just your cells screwing up when they replicate.
Hmm.
But when a prion disease happens in an organism, it creates a spongiform disease. You've heard of mad cow disease?
Yeah, for sure.
That's like, mad cow disease is the sexy name for bovine spongiform encephalitis. It's a spongiform disorder. Prions and spongiforms are freaky because we don't really know how they get kicked off. And they're progressive, which means they happen little bit by little bit. But what they do is always fatal. They eat holes in your brain.
Oh.
Yeah. You know how, like, a sponge, it's got all those little holes and cutout bits going through it?
Uh-huh.
Imagine that happening to your brain.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, not good.
Turning your brain into a sponge.
Yeah. Luckily, these diseases don't really transfer between species. So we don't have to really be afraid of getting mad cow disease.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So if you were worried about that, you can sleep tonight, okay?
Oh, thank God.
But if you eat the wrong human meat, there can be a prion malfunction in your body, which causes one of the scariest diseases we can get, kuru.
Kuru?
Kuru. And while kuru might not sound spoopy, do you know what the alternative name for kuru is?
No, what's that?
The shiver.
Okay.
Yeah, kuru, or the shiver, is one of the spookiest things that I've read about. So I'm going to make you read about it here. Naturally.
Oh, cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Kuru is a very rare disease. It is caused by an infectious prion found in contaminated human brain tissue. Kuru was first found among people from New Guinea who practiced a form of cannibalism in which they ate the brains of dead people as part of a funeral ritual. This practice stopped in 1960, but cases of kuru were reported for many years afterward because the disease has a long incubation period. The term kuru derives from the fore word kuria, meaning to shake, due to the body tremors that are a classic symptom of the disease. It is also known as the laughing sickness, due to the pathologic bursts of laughter, which are a symptom of the disease.
Yeah, it's spooky, man.
Cool. So you laugh and shake from eating human meat
while your brain is decomposing.
Very, very cool. Thank you for this nightmare that you have put into my brain.
Yeah, and it's all completely uncontrollable. So how it developed was because one of the people in this tribe developed a disease known as Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. And that's just one of the things that happens when a prion or spongiform disorder just kind of spontaneously arises. Sometimes things malfunction and your genes don't work the way they're supposed to, and your brain just starts decomposing. Now, that's normally not a huge issue because other people can't catch that. It's not communicable.
Right.
But if you're eating the brain of someone else who has that disorder, then you can absorb those proteins as they get added to your own body. And that's what causes the shiver.
Well, that's upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a great note to end on. Unfortunately, that's where I'm going to kind of wrap things up for today. It kind of puts a whole new bummer spin on, in Temple of Doom, where they're having the big buffet with the monkey and they're like eating the monkey's brain with the chopsticks. Puts a little scary spin on that. Like halfway through, Indiana Jones just starts laughing uncontrollably.
Oh.
It's just like shaking and falls down.
Oh, shit. Well, great. Thank you for that nightmare fuel.
Yeah, and that's why you shouldn't eat other people.
Well, I'm convinced. Finally.
If you weren't before, hopefully Kuru's going to put you off of it.
I legit have kind of wondered, like, why... I had a conversation with my roommates few weeks ago. We're all hanging out at a local bar here, Lineage Brewing, throwing back some cold ones with the boys, if you will. And we were talking about it. I was like, why wouldn't you, if you could legally and knowingly, ethically acquire human meat, why wouldn't you try it? And I'm glad that you presented all of this information to me, because it definitely refutes a lot of the nonsense that we were telling each other. Like, I'm pretty sure that you can get it legally, but... And yeah, we were just talking out of our asses.
No, you gotta go like deep web to get that. You can't just buy it.
I don't know of an ethical way to get human meat, but... Yeah, I don't want to get Kuru, so thanks for sparing me my moment of idiocy where I'm just like, I'll try it. Try anything. Heck.
Which one of your roommates thinks that you can just buy human meat? Like jungle gyms?
I don't remember. It was the memory's a little fuzzy.
It's pretty good.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for this research. This is very informative, and now I know not to eat people. And thank you.
Good. I'm glad.
And thank you, dearest, greatest, loveliest, most exquisite listener, for listening to this podcast.
Our birthday episode.
Our very special 1 year anniversary. Max, congrats on 1 year of podcasting.
Wow. That's pretty good.
It was. It's been a fun ride. Oh, do you mean the high five we did just now?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a good high five too.
<It's good. laughs>
Tell us who you want to eat and what you want to do about cannibalism. Or just your thoughts in general. We love hearing from you guys. You can find us on social media at PreDeadBoys. Email us predeadboys@gmail.com. Search PreDeadBoys Podcast on Facebook and join our Facebook group. Shout out to one listener who told us some very unfortunate news about how Everest explorer George Mallory was discovered.
Yeah, that was a bit of a bummer.
A bummer?
Oh no.
Yeah, we have some fun conversations and discoveries on that group, so join us and hang out there. Also, we're kind of conversating on the r/deathpositive subreddit.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Yeah, thank you to people who commented on that and kind of let me know that there's a little bit more to transhumanism than just cryonics and mind uploading.
Yeah, those and are not dying.
Yeah. Those seem to be definitely the two most silly sort of strains of transhumanism, but maybe as a little bit of an addendum to our last episode about transhumanism, not everybody who's a transhumanist is just like filled with silly ideas. You know, I understand the perspective of just wanting human life to be longer.
Yeah.
So we're down with that. But yeah, thanks for talking to us.
We love learning new things.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't learn new things unless you talk to us and tell us how wrong we are and how stupid we are.
It's very helpful.
It is. We learned a lot. If you want to support this podcast, we'll love you forever, and we promise not to eat you. You can tell a friend about this podcast. Again, we don't advertise. We just want people to spread this word of mouth. You can tip us financially. You can give us $3 on ko-fi.com/predeadboys. And you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. If you do that, we'll give you a shout out on an episode and tell you how much we love you and want to not eat you. It's getting an old bit. I'll just stop threatening to eat people. Anyway, give us some stuff to read in episodes this year. That'd be sweet. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And thanks again for listening.
You hungry?
Well, I did have that flub where I accidentally said brisket.
You did.
Instead of briskly. And now I do want beef brisket.
You know, I do have that charcuterie board over there.
You do? The football-shaped one?
Yeah, it's been there. I can't believe I fucked up and forgot to eat it on Super Bowl day.
Oh, you mean the big game.
Big game day?
Big game day.
Whoops.
Well, it looks like we're going to have a little bit of a big game celebration of our own tonight. What a surprise.
I can say World Series all I want. I can say NBA Finals as much as I want.
Right.
If I say big game, the NFL, like, kicks down my door.
Yeah, they're assholes. And I don't know why they want to disassociate the name of their big end of the season celebration. I don't know why they want to, like, punish people for talking about that on Twitter. It's nonsense. Fuck the Super Bowl and fuck Tom Brady. Max and Dorian here, reminding you, you're gonna rot. Reminding you, but especially reminding Tom Brady's candy ass, you're gonna rot. And I hope it's sooner rather than later. And that you stop going to the damn Super Bowl. There's so many other franchises.
Get Mahomes in there.
Mahomes is so close! And then just a coin flip. It was a coin flip that the Patriots got to start overtime. And I'm outraged because there are all these beautiful franchises across the country. Like, Green Bay Packers. You know that they're owned by the fans? What? Are you calling Roger Goodell?
I had found Roger Goodell's office number at one point. That didn't work.
Well, that's just confusing. It just says National Football League and then
hangs up.
Man, I thought you were going to have some real revelation for us that you had this secret...
I'm going to call and complain.
I would like to file a complaint. Tom Brady goes to the Super Bowl too much. Tell him to cut it out. Stop playing football so good. I believe it was Gandhi that once said, "Be the change that you wish to see in professional sports."
Thank you for calling the National Football League. Our switchboard hours are Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you'd like to leave a comment, please press star and you'll be transferred to our comments line. Wait while I transfer your call. Sorry, this number is busy. Thank you for calling the National Football League. Our switchboard hours are Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. While I transfer your call. Sorry, this number is busy.
Just left it off the hook.
Our switchboard hours. Thank you for calling the National Football League.
We'll try again later this week.
Good audio.